This episode is brought to you by IVP. If you've ever encountered grief, you know that it takes time and space to grieve well. In her book, Can You Just Sit With Me?, author Natasha Smith offers deeply personal reflections combined with relevant research and practical tools that point us to God, who always sits with us in our grief. And as a listener of this podcast, you can receive Can You Just Sit With Me for 25% off when you use the promo code IVPOD25, that's IVPOD25, at ivpress.com.
IVP produced this podcast as a public service. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your mental health professional or another qualified health provider for any questions you may have related to mental health conditions. Tell us about a time when you've struggled to get out of bed. It could be recent, it could be in the past, it could be this morning. For me, it was 2 days ago.
The most intense time and just wanting to shut down was after my husband was diagnosed with schizophrenia and we were heading toward divorce. And waking up, you forget the reality, and then you wake up every morning and you just want to go back to sleep because that reality is a little too hard to face head on.
Walk us through some of those conversations. How did you get yourself to get up and get moving?
I had the severe mercy of having a 8 and 10 year old children I had to get to school. And then as a single mom, I didn't have him in there, so I didn't have someone else I could rely on to pick up any of the slack. So, you know, just the mere need to keep my children alive was a big help. I didn't want to lose them too, so I had to function at some level.
In this episode, I spoke to Wendy Alsop, a math professor and the author of I Forgive You and Companions in Suffering. As someone who has had his own mental health challenges and had to watch his spouse respond the best that she could, I was looking forward to this interview because Wendy has written about her experience with a husband who suffered from a severe mental illness. I had never talked to Wendy before, even though I'd been friends with her across the internet for many years. And knowing her story and knowing the great suffering that she's gone through, I did not expect someone who had that much joy. So I'm sure you still carried the weight of that with you as you went through your day. And how did you keep that mental affliction at bay so that you could keep going with the kids?
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of unhealthy coping mechanisms that one can incorporate. And I've had to discipline. I need to discipline myself. I would have at times where I recognize I was going to unhealthy coping mechanisms, particularly amusement, you know, mind without thought, anything that I could entertain without thought was something I gave myself over to try to deaden the temptation to think too hard about things I couldn't control.
Sometimes that's healthy though, right? I mean, that to me, I don't know. I've struggled with that myself where it's like, so for me, it's telling stupid jokes on Twitter. And that brings me a lot of pleasure, but it's mindless to some extent, right? It's not It's not all that productive, but it means a lot to me. And there are times when I can't resolve stuff that's going on in my life and I can't fix my stupid brain. It's just going to be stupid. And so what can I do? Well, I can make up a joke and or I can make up a meme.
Yeah. Sometimes I give myself over to dog cat videos, like I'm the queen of the silly animal video. I could never get above 7,000 followers because like the moment that something happens and someone's retweeting my stuff and maybe I get a bunch of new followers, I go on a puppy cat video tear and they're like, what the heck? What is with this woman? And there it goes.
There it goes. But you love the puppy cat videos.
Well, I think they remind me of Eden. They're like a little tether to what God created us to enjoy and where we're heading back in long term. So I love a good dog animal interaction video. Supernaturally, like it's a spiritual thing for me.
No, I mean, that makes sense. I think making jokes on Twitter for me serves a similar purpose where it's like, I do feel nourished by it, even though if someone were like, why are you using your time on Twitter? I'd be hard pressed to explain it in a tough argument, justify it. But I know viscerally, it's actually pretty helpful for me. And there are ways of numbing myself with social media that are harmful and destructive. And there are ways of doing it that are dog and cat videos, reminding you of Eden and nurturing your spirit.
Right. As opposed to my binging House of Cards at the worst of my relationship, which I'm not totally sure was particularly healthy amusement, but the dog and cat videos and social media positivity, I think, is good. And a deep laugh, anything that provides a deep laugh is good.
Yeah. How did you incorporate others into your struggles?
Well, that happened fairly naturally for me, although I felt very alienated. The Lord brought several people, and the key was for me to recognize who they were and allow them into my life.
Was that difficult, the allowing into your life part?
Yeah, because some of that means that you have to face head on what you're trying to cope with, amusement to not deal with, you know.
Yeah.
But I had a series of friends that had experience in similar or different types of struggles than I had, but they had enough experience with suffering and discouragement and depression to, they had gone on before me. And so they were able just with their responses or examples, kind of help me get my own footing under me for this long path that, you know, this is going to be the rest of my life. It's not going to resolve.
Right.
And so what I needed to learn was how to get sure footing on new terrain. And they were helpful to me with that.
Was that in your church community?
Some in my church community, some friends from the past. But what they all had in common was they had all suffered in some way. Like two of them had lost their dads at an early age. One was confined to a wheelchair after a surgery went wrong, you know, so they had like a variety of different issues in their lives. And what I ended up doing was starting this little Facebook group, and I invited them in and I just said, listen, I need a place I can be raw and I'm not going to be offended if you don't want to be a part of this, but I need encouragement. Like I needed people that wouldn't be depressed when I was depressed, but people that had, you know what I mean? Like
yes,
my discouragement brings them down. Well, that's actually not very helpful, but I understand. I mean,
right.
I can't blame someone for being discouraged when I'm discouraged, but I needed people who their faith was solid. And so they could kind of keep, there's a way I like to word it. Like they could keep hope and faith for me when I couldn't keep it for myself.
Wow. So was that a difficult process for you to reach out? Because it sounds like you were being really intentional. Like, I'm going to form this Facebook group. We're going to do this together. You're the type of person I think I could bring in. Was that a difficult process for you? Or were you the kind of person who knew, okay, I can't do this alone, so I'm just going to go hustle and find people?
No, it took me a little while. I talked to my brother-in-law at a pretty low point, and he's a pastor. And I just said, you know, when you counsel people, how do you tell them, you know, to endure something like this? And he suggested to me that I try to find five or so friends that I could really be raw with. He said, you're going to have somebody that you can talk with about the worst parts of this. And so that was the prompt. And that was months in. Maybe it's over. Honestly, that was 4 years after my husband was first diagnosed, and year after our divorce. It was after I was diagnosed with breast cancer that I really got to the place that I realized I needed a network. I just couldn't do this.
So you went those 4 years by yourself. Is that what you're saying?
Well, partly by myself. Now, that was back in Seattle, and I actually had a couple that were both therapists, and they were community group leaders, and they walked with me pretty closely. And I had a few friends that I would talk to, but I really didn't intentionally build a group until I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I was able to power through some, but after that, there was no powering through that on top of the rest.
Have you found that you've been able to be that person for others now that you've had that experience?
Yes. And part of my regret is that I wasn't that person for others before I went through all of this, the same way I know to be now. And I have a few friends, I've gone back and apologized to them. I'm like, you know what? I was threatened by your discouragement. You know, I tried to lecture you out of your discouragement, and I didn't hold faith for you when you were struggling yourself. But yeah, I feel, Lord willing, I'm better at recognizing and not trying to solve it. That for me was a big thing. You know, you don't want it for them, so you want to help them get out of it. So you keep offering suggestions of things to try or ways to pray or verses to read.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I had people piling that on me that I realized, wow, you know, that actually does not help me right now.
So what did? If those kinds of words weren't helpful, what kind of words were helpful to you? And do you share with others who are struggling to get out of bed now?
I remember a friend one day said, I'm praying Psalm 69 for you. And I went and looked it up, and it was such a psalm of lament, such raw language there, that being exposed and pointed to raw language, or having someone receive my raw language and then point me to God's word and the raw language there, so that I had a healthy way of manifesting what was clearly going on in my soul. Because I find it funny, you know, we've been having a debate about if it's okay to get mad at God after the shooting at Covenant.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I don't even know that that's, the question isn't, is it okay? It's going to happen. The question is, what do you do with it when it does? And so scripture gives us this language, because the worst thing we could do is experience something like this and think we can't take it to God. You know, the throne room is for the times when we need grace and mercy. And that was the most important thing, is that people showed me how to take my own struggles with confidence, because I was using the language of God. And that was pretty powerful for me.
Do you feel like the church has gotten better on the issue of mental health?
Pockets of it have. Church is a big word.
Oh, yeah. Fair. Okay. So evangelicals in America, do you feel like we've gotten better at dealing with mental health? And where do you feel like, okay, there's still an area where we need a lot of education or growth or spiritual maturity?
Well, I think evangelicals in America are pretty messed up overall and splintered. So I would say it's pockets within there as well. But I think that I don't hear the same proactive anti-medicine language that I've heard in the past. And so I think that's helpful that people do see the common grace of the medical profession. You know, early on, I was from a background that, you know, that was like, oh, you're giving in.
Yep. That's what I heard.
And so hopefully that is happening less and less. And I've been received pretty well. I don't hide the fact that, you know, actually they prescribed me antidepressants because I was having hot flashes. And then through that, believe it or not, that's kind of an interesting thing that Lexapro is a, if you have hot flashes after a hysterectomy, it's like your first line of defense. But it also helps with some other things I learned.
Yeah. Yeah.
I learned I also needed Lexapro, and I probably wasn't. But I feel like in my own honesty that I haven't been rejected. I've been reasonably received and not lectured against. So hopefully we're doing a better job.
That's great to hear.
I think we do. I'll just say this, Alan. I think we have a sense that, well, you're going to take medicine instead of studying the Bible, or you're going to study the Bible instead of take medicine. But medicine for your brain is just a common grace. And what I found for myself was that it'll help me get to a place where I can then re-engage scripture rationally.
Yeah.
I'm not overwhelmed by irrational thoughts that are weighing me down and keeping me. They've become a barrier because my mind is mush. I have a pretty good openness to it because the same thing will happen to my brain as a diabetic. Now, that's more in short term. But if my blood sugar is low, I can get angry, irrational anger, irrational depression. Now, short term, all you have to do is eat a cookie and then suddenly you're better. And when it only takes a cookie to solve your problem, it's a good indication that it's biological, hormonal.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a spiritual issue.
Right.
And so that experience in particular has given me a lot of freedom from the way I was taught in the church to understand that there are hormones and things going on in here and they're not spiritual.
Right. Right. But they have implications on how you act spiritually. And so you need to eat that cookie.
Absolutely.
In order to be healthy. And some of us need medication in order to get to that place where we can think rationally so that we can engage scripture. And as you say, I like the way it's putting that as a common grace. It's a way of, you know, helping us to move through the world and glorify God better. And that's a beautiful thing, not something to be shamed. And I do think you're right that we've gotten, as a whole, we've gotten better about that. We're more comfortable talking about it. We still have a ways to go, but we've done some good things. I'm curious, in my book on getting out of bed, I don't talk about my own mental health struggles because I didn't want it to be that kind of book, which is a fine kind of book, but I just didn't want it to be that kind of book. And so I'm not going to do that here. But I will say that, you know, I've had the experience of being the one struggling for my spouse, and my spouse has had to be the one to carry that load. And I know that's something that you experienced. How did you manage that? How did you manage that burden of being the one who's on the other side?
You know, there was a long time where, I mean, it was really, really discouraging to me. But in our situation, I was not received in, you know, the encouragement I gave concerning listening to your doctor on medicine. So I don't want to say something that puts a weight on you, Alan. But, you know, it's important to have compassion on the spouses because, you know, I've often felt like just to be honest, I can't break down because there's nobody to catch me if I do. Everybody else broke down. And if I break down too, then we're all going to hell in a handbasket. So sometimes that's what gets me out of bed in the morning. And sometimes when I'm upset or something, I'll feel pretty, get down in the mouth or whatever you want to call it, that, well, everybody else can be depressed, but God forbid I be and not get out of bed, because then nobody gets ready or nobody.
Yeah.
So, it can be something in which you really need some encouragement. But the most important thing for me was when Andy was able to receive my help, and I knew that I was being helpful and that my perseverance was helping. I was way more able to persevere. But then persevering when they're rejecting, or when the worst point for us came when his mental issues caused me to be the enemy. And that was just, how do you endure in that? That was a really bad period of time for me. Now we have a good relationship. He comes over every day. I help him with his disability. And again, so, when he's down or discouraged, although it makes me sad for him, I'm able to persevere because my help is welcome. And it's that difference that really can harm a caregiver, I think. Because you love someone, you want to help them. But then they despise you for helping them. That's really puts you in a really hard position. And I would resent it. I just resented it. So, one, I love you. I'm trying to help you. And you resent me for doing this. And so now you're both rejecting me. And I'm having to watch this person I love head toward really bad places. And so that was a lot of my own personal mental battles tied to that during that season.
Yeah. And on top of that, you're still getting the kids ready for school and making sure the house functions and doing these day-to-day things, I'm imagining.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot. So your encouragement would be for those who are struggling with the mental illness and have a spouse or a friend who's trying to be a caregiver, make sure that it's clear that you are accepting and welcoming of that support, because that's going to be the thing that's going to help them endure the burden of being a caregiver.
Right. Just let them know that you see them. And I think that just goes a tremendous way. I mean, it doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to buy them a gift or something. Just, I see what you're doing and thank you.
Yeah. So you mentioned cat and dog videos. What are some other things? And you mentioned, your kids. What are some other things some really nice things in your world that help keep mental affliction at bay?
I garden.
Oh.
And gardening to me is, I have a lot of strategies to keep me tethered to Eden and hoping for the new Jerusalem. And gardening is a particular one. Like, it's just such a miracle to put this tiny little hard seed in the ground.
Yeah.
And then with water and sunlight, it just grows and then it makes fruit and you can eat this fruit. I just think gardening is the most amazing thing. And every time I work in the garden, I think about the Garden of Eden. I think about weeds, what weeds meant for the fall of man. I think about our hope for redemption. So what is that? We're going to grow.
Wow.
We're going to grow and have fruit with no weeds. And what's that going to be like? So gardening, like pet videos, is a very spiritual thing to me.
Do you have a regular schedule that you keep to do that? Or is that just something you do whenever it comes up?
I do it in the evenings usually because I'm sadly working full time. I mean, lots of people work full time, but I was raised to be that stay-at-home mom who volunteered or with her kids, and life has funneled me down to a full-time single mom supporting the family. So, but I try to do it every evening when I get home from work. And if I just weed even 15 minutes and water the garden, walk around a little bit, it's therapy.
That's great. That's beautiful. All right. Final question here. Why get out of bed? What would you tell people? More bluntly, why live? What advice would you give to people?
Well, my advice would be, if you feel like dying, it's okay to embrace death to self so that you can be alive for others. And so for me, a lot of my hopes and dreams that I had as a kid for myself have died. I die daily. I'm dead, you know. And there would be people, sometimes secular folks, that I think would be horrified by the way I might communicate that. But there is a sense in which they that lose their lives will find it, and where you find it is in others. And so for me, I really find joy in my boys. I find joy in the garden. I find joy in helping a student. And that's why I get out of bed, because I think that their lives are important. And that sustains me when anything about my own life is discouraging or is not.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to go through a pretty big mental process with that once my boys go off to college.
Yeah. I was wondering about that.
Yeah. So the first one's heading out to college. He's only an hour away, so he'll be a freshman. And then I still have a sophomore at home. And I'm facing it head on, you know. They have been prompts to get out of bed for a long time. And how I've got to figure out what are the motivating factors for joy. Because it's not going to be me.
Yeah.
What is going to, and how do I embrace that? My parents are helpful to me too right now. They live on the farm. They're 82 and 85, and caring for them is a big joy to me, a motivating factor, but I have to face head on there, you know. So I have the potential loss of four people in the coming years that have been kind of anchored me, who have pulled me out of bed in the morning if I was unwilling to get up myself. And so I think I'm hoping that an honest assessment and looking forward and owning head on how this is going to affect me and praying through and thinking through what's the next path.
Yeah, but you're being intentional about it, and that seems like the right strategy. And honestly, I mean, from an outside perspective, there's something a little bit exciting about this, because I know you're going to find other people, and other people need you to help them. And you have wisdom that other people don't have. And, you know, you said earlier in this conversation that, you know, you looked back and you wish you had been that person to give advice and counsel and encouragement to others when you need it, when they needed it. But I suspect the truth is that you have this wisdom now that you just couldn't have had then. And what you've been through and the experiences that you've been through are going to be a gift, are a gift, continue to be a gift in your writing and your ministry. And it's kind of exciting to think it's going to be that way for other people too. You know, I don't know who those people are, but they're there and they need you. The world is filled with people. I mean, you know, this working with students, the world is filled with people who need love, who need God's love, and they're not getting it. And that's exciting.
Yeah, thanks. So,
yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. So, Wendy, what role do you think grief played in your role as a caregiver? Are you able to find time to grieve?
You know, I was able to grieve some when we were fully estranged. I don't allow myself now. I've been actually talking with a couple friends about it. I feel like sometimes I disassociate, you know, classic unhealthy version, but I have areas in my brain. I got some manhole covers with some parts that you can smell a little bit if you walk by, that we're going to keep those manhole covers down for a bit more, because I find the tension between processing and caring. So if people need me to function, how much in-depth processing of emotions. Now, I will say earlier on, I've spent a good bit of time with counselors and therapists. I really struggle with panic attacks early on. I'm at peace now with where we're at, and probably one really helpful place is that my life was torn apart and then I rebuilt it by God's grace, of course, in a way that my ex-husband now doesn't have the power to take it apart.
Right.
And so now I'm able to help him from a place of more stability for myself, whereas before his instability really resulted in our entire lives, everything I knew at that point falling apart as well. But I sometimes have moments of introspection, but mostly what I do right now is I ride my bike at night and I pray. I don't have any music or anything. I ride my bike around our farmhouse. We have a loop, have a little light on my bike. And it, that physical activity with prayer of God over where I am now, knowing where I've been, has been good for me. So I'm happy. I'm a happy person. Occasionally, losses from this path hit me, but I've also had gains. I've had gains too. Like, there are parts of my life that are better now, parts of my life that I like better. I like my character better. I like the lessons I've learned better than the ignorance I had in the past. So God has been kind to me, and I do see a lot of fruit of the Spirit. I have peace. I have joy. And, you know, that's sometimes great. My boys and I, we have a good time together. We have a happy home and we laugh a lot. And when we laugh deeply or enjoy something fun together, or they had a really great time, I love it because I know it's a miracle.
Huh.
You know, I say often the things I thought would destroy us didn't destroy us. And that's the miracle.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you. It's clear that this experience has changed her character and made her into a better person. The fruit of the Spirit is evident in her life. Probably the thing that will stick with me the longest is that for those who are caregivers, what they need to hear is that they are seen and loved and appreciated for their support. I hope that from this episode, listeners can take away a deeper appreciation for the ability of humans to persevere through very difficult times with the strength of God. Wendy is a testament to that. And she even says that, you know, that's part of her story, is that there were times when she felt like things weren't going to get better or their lives were going to fall apart. But they didn't. And in fact, in some ways, she says that her life is better than it was before. And that's remarkable. I'd also like people to take away an appreciation for cat and dog videos. IVP is invested in advocating for mental health. Through the publication of books like On Getting Out of Bed by Alan Noble and Companions in Suffering by Wendy Alsup, IVP provides Christian resources for both individuals and professionals. Find all of IVP's mental health resources at ivpress.com/mentalhealth.